Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Are you frustrated with your progress in the government market? Skyway's team of former contracting officers helps their customers of all sizes move faster, win more contracts, and manage the contracts they have more effectively. Go to askskyway.com to schedule a time to learn more. Our topic today is why the government is not really good at buying new technologies that they didn't invent themselves. Let's get started. People buy things for a lot of reasons. Things they may need, things they may not need.
There's a sales axiom that says people buy based on emotion and then justify with logic later. And when we look around our houses and we see stuff, you're like, yeah, I thought I'd use that. Or, well, I paid a lot for that, but I liked it. Yeah, it's really true. I mean, that's why it's a sales axiom.
Yeah, I got to tell, this is me as a younger person. Maybe it's still true with guitars. It's so easy to see someone who you really idolize, who's an incredible musician playing a certain brand of guitar or type of guitar, and say, I got to get one of those because then I'll sound or look like that person. That's why they build signature models with the guy's name right on it. So, you know, you're playing what he's playing, which is never true.
Yeah, that's the essence of marketing, is convince you that that brand is the difference.
Right.
It's not. And yeah, we bought a treadmill a few years ago, like, geez, probably 15 years ago. And as I moved around, as we were working for the military, it followed us from house to house. And then we got to Florida, and I noticed that it was sitting for like 7 years, that there was stuff hanging on it. And I realized, well, I bought it, and I kept it out of emotion. I'm like, well, I paid for this thing, I might as well use it, right? But it wasn't meeting a requirement anymore, because now I live in Florida, I can run all the time. Because the requirement was be able to run independent of the weather, which is a real requirement when you live in Colorado. But when you live in Florida, just run before the sun comes up and it's not too hot. And then this time of year, it's gorgeous.
So that gets us right into what we're talking about today, which is requirements versus solutions. And when you look back at that and you define it as a requirement, the requirement wasn't, I need a treadmill. The treadmill was a solution that met your requirement, which is to run in regardless of the weather. You solved that problem. The new solution was move to Florida. Same requirement. You want to be able to run, but now you don't need the treadmill and it's still sitting around. And that it's a good illustration of the conversation that we're going to have here in a minute about requirements and solution. But it's also an illustration of maybe government furnished property and disposal of government furnished property. We'll have to circle back to that on a separate episode.
Yeah. My treadmill is GFP. It's been here forever. Yeah. I've seen that in offices before.
What this comes down to, government acquisition is different than private sector acquisition. This is one of those places where it's quite different. Requirements versus solutions-based buying is one of the core concepts here. And we'll get into that in a minute. But first, let's stop and say thanks.
I want to say thanks. This is an iTunes 5-star review from JBMOS. We'll call him Jib Moss. Why not? And it says, the podcast removes and this is in quotes, the shroud of secrecy of finding and winning a government contract within your niche. That's what we're trying
awesome.
To do. The shroud of secrecy. That's a great review. So thanks, JB Moss, or Jib Moss for short.
Actually, I wonder if it's an acronym as a username. I have no idea what JBMOS would be. I got distracted. All right, back
rabbit
to the
hole,
topic.
Rabbit hole.
Today we're talking about requirements-based acquisition versus solutions-based acquisition. What is requirements-based acquisition as we're defining it here today on the podcast, Kevin?
Requirements-based acquisition is buying what you need based on a defined requirement. I mean, it sounds kind of obvious when you say it that way, but there's a classic Zig Ziglar story. Zig Ziglar is an old school sales guy, did sales training forever. He would say, people don't need a half-inch drill bit. They need a half-inch hole. The drill bit is what gets them that hole, right? And a lot of times we'll confuse the requirement with the solution. The requirement isn't the drill bit. The requirement is to make a half-inch hole. The drill bit just gets us there. And that's the essence of requirements-based acquisition, is you're buying something based on, what do you need? I need a hole. I need a quarter-inch hole or a half-inch hole. So I'm going to go buy a drill bit to get me there. And you could use something else. You could use a really big nail, I guess.
It wouldn't be as nice of a hole, I don't think. You could just poke your finger through it too if you had a half inch round finger. All right.
Focus.
shopaholics often suffer from this lack of requirements-based acquisition, right? If you go to the mall with the idea of, I'm going to buy stuff, and you're not there with a mission to buy certain things, you're going to come back with a lot of bags of stuff that might be fun, but then they end up being like your treadmill, sitting around, why did I buy that again? Did I really need it? It just happens. But this is the emotion in shopping. And back to guitar stories again, I don't need any more guitars. I have plenty of guitars. I have zero requirements for more guitars. Ask my wife. And I'm not that bad. I'm not a collector. I can count on, well, I was going to say both hands, but I can't count on both hands how many I have. But I don't need any more. But I could be enticed by emotion. If I'm in a vintage guitar shop, I could be enticed to buy something new. I could see something cool online and want to buy one of those. I definitely don't need another guitar. Probably won't use it as much as I expect, but I could get wrapped up in it. And that's the shopping thing. That's emotion driving you. It's not buying based on an actual requirement.
In the government market, requirements-based selling, it's really about finding the organization, the agency, the customer who needs what you sell. Do they need what you sell? Which is why we talk about targeting so much.
Or sometimes in the government market, requirements-based selling is about building what the customer says they need. Sometimes the government has a requirement for something that's never been done before. And in that case, they write out a whole specification and say, build me exactly this.
And all that's based on what is the requirement? What do they need? Which is probably not another guitar.
So let's talk about the other side, solutions-based acquisition. Solutions-based acquisition is buying a solution that we may not need, or more likely not know that we need, but we'll definitely use it. It's when we're introduced to a solution that makes our life or business better or easier.
An example is that I have an app on my phone that tracks the mileage that I run. I didn't know that I needed that, but you know what? It's actually pretty cool to know how many miles I run and the fact that my phone can track it for me. Or like a higher speed modem or a safer car. Like, we didn't know we needed curtain airbags, but they're sure nice to have.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are buying a solution because it solves a problem that we didn't know we had. That's what solution space is about.
Yep. Once people came up with airbags for cars, it became a requirement that pretty much every car has to have them now, or you don't get the right safety ratings. Or an example of what we're doing right now, we use an application called Box to share our files when we're building content for the podcast. In the old days, we used to have to email files to each other to share content. I don't even want to talk about the super old days before email. But you used to have to share content one way. Then they came up with cloud-based solutions where you could back up your all of your content online, but it was only a backup. Then came cloud-based sharing applications like Box and Dropbox and Google Drive and all the other tools that people use. We didn't know we needed it, but once somebody showed us, hey, this is available, man, that's exactly what we need. We're going to start using that.
I didn't know what I didn't know about how hard we were working emailing files back and forth, and it saves us a lot of time to do it this way. Now, here's the trick. Solutions-based selling requires more marketing and advertising because you got to show them. You got to show the customer. Like, we got a Roomba, that's a little robotic sweeper thing, right? I didn't know that I needed that until we've got one, and it's awesome. I just let it run all day, and it vacuums the floor for me.
You used to be perfectly happy vacuuming your house by yourself until you figured out there's a little thing that can just roll around, and your cat can ride on it. And
exactly.
You don't have a cat, but if you did, it might ride on it. Another example that we've figured out over time is your company, Skyway, Kevin. Skyway does consulting content and consulting services, but people may not understand why that's important. The unique thing about Skyway is that it's staffed by former contracting officers who have a specific viewpoint, which can be very helpful to small businesses trying to get into the government market or win more business.
And after we talk to them, they understand that it's for them, right? But they don't write a requirement to have a team of former contracting officers on call.
Right.
That's not something that people think of. And until they've listened to, for example, 100 episodes of this podcast, they didn't realize that a CO could help them. But that's why this is, we have to show them, this is solutions-based. And I didn't realize, that's the crazy part, I didn't realize we were solutions-based until about 2 years ago.
Everyone knew they had a requirement for what you
exactly.
did.
Exactly. It's like, what do you mean you never required? Like, you're not writing RFPs for this? And because we were, so if you don't know that you're a solutions-based provider,
right,
Yeah. It's frustrating.
All right, let's link this to the time zones. We are talking about, obviously, in the acquisition time zones, the requirement zone. The word's right there, requirement. So during the early phases of the acquisition process, the requirement zone and the market research zone, it's very helpful to have an understanding between requirements-based selling and solutions-based selling. This also comes up in the execution time zones when you get to the recompete zone, which we've talked about in those episodes. Recompete zone overlaps the requirement zone and the market research zone. This is where the government's deciding how they're going to repeat compete if they have a continuing need or what else they're going to buy if the need has changed.
In this case, the recompete and market research zones overlap. And what can happen there is that when we competed this contract last time, a solution didn't exist that now does, that actually solves that requirement. So that's why it's important to understand which angle you're coming from. If you're a solutions-based seller, you need to be marketing through the market research zone so the government knows that, hey, you have something that solves this problem.
Yeah. Otherwise, they write the requirement for more of what they did before, and it rules you out because what you do is different, that solves their problem in a better, newer way. All right, the important difference that we're talking about is that the government acquisition market and sometimes large bureaucratic organizations, it's not built to solve problems that it doesn't know it has. And this is a fundamental change. The government used to drive technological innovation in our country. The government's requirements were often for things that didn't yet exist, like an aircraft that can't be detected by radar or a vehicle that can carry humans to the moon. Many of those innovations, well, and more importantly, the supporting technologies that enabled those innovations became consumer products that we know and love today. But now the market drives technology. The government didn't come up with the idea for smartphones or cloud computing or artificial intelligence or machine learning. Or if they did come up with the requirement, they came up with the basic concept and industry ran wild with it and is way ahead of what the government can think of as far as requirements. The government acquisition struggles to keep up with the market in those cases.
And the procurement process, it's largely built on the concept of managing the acquisition of the requirement. So if, like you just said, if I don't have a requirement for how to use or apply machine learning, I'm not paying attention to it. Yet lots of innovative companies are using machine learning to do things better, faster, smarter. The process, the acquisition process, is all about refining what is needed and defined in the requirement zone. Hence the fact that we have a requirement zone.
Right.
You have to start with that.
By definition, that request for proposal is requirements-based. The purpose of that request for proposal is to meet a government requirement. A solution shows up without an RFP. The government doesn't say, hey, I'm interested in buying one of these things. Who can build it, create it, sell it to me? A solution appears and the government says, wow, that's a really good idea. I'd like to buy that. But they're not equipped to do it easily.
Yeah, there are processes to do that. But yeah, that's a podcast for a different day.
We're many minutes in and we're finally getting to our first FAR quote, but can't have a contracting officer podcast without quoting the FAR at some point.
Exactly. Just one. Actually, two. We have two quotes today.
The entire acquisition process is built based on requirements. If you go to FAR 7.103C, it says the agency head or designee shall prescribe procedures to ensure that acquisition planners address the requirement to specify needs, develop specifications, and to solicit offers to promote and provide for full and open competition, blah, 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 blah.
The important part there was the ensure that acquisition planners address the requirement. Written right in there. Doesn't say go buy what looks cool. It says, which a lot of us do, it actually can be a really good decision, but it says acquisition planners address the requirement to specific needs.
FAR 7.105 describes the contents of a written acquisition plan, which is required for everything over a certain threshold. Paragraph 1 talks about a statement of need. What do you need? What problem are you trying to solve?
And that's why the RFP score, the opportunity assessment tool that we've created that our customers use, the very first question is, because it's based on FAR 7.105, the list of items that are in there. And the very first question is, how do you know the customer needs this? Because if you don't know they need it, it's scoring the RFP. It's going to tell you what is the chance of actually winning this thing. Yeah. And if you don't know that they need it, or you're like, well, they should need it. That's not the same thing.
Right.
Do you know that they need it?
And if you have something that they don't know they need, there's never going to be an RFP for it. That's a different kind of problem.
When I was a contracting officer at SOCOM, Special Operations Command, I'd go to conferences, and I got to tell you, some of the stuff, the innovative stuff that industry would come up with was very cool. I mean, think about it. These are things that you're selling to Navy SEALs and Rangers and Special Forces. And as I'm walking around as a contracting officer, looking at all this cool stuff, I'm thinking, yeah, that's really an awesome tool. And they're showing me how it works and everything. And then I'll find something that I know my customer needs. And now my brain lights up and I'm like, hey, can I have your contact information? And, you know, let's talk about what your background is. And are you a small business, et cetera? The reason it changed, the reason I'm suddenly interested is because I know there's a requirement.
Right. Everything else is cool, but.
And as a CO, that's my role in this process, is that what is the requirement we're trying to fulfill? And so there's another episode we'll have to talk about. We talk about the three deciders, right? In that scenario, that marketing that's happening at this conference, that's for the economic decider and the user. But me as a contracting officer, I want that requirement. There's got to be a requirement to tie me to listen to you. And so if you don't realize that and you're trying to pitch a CO on something that their customer doesn't need or they don't know their customer needs, you're wasting both of your time.
Yeah. It's really hard for the government to buy something that they don't have a requirement for. It's not impossible, but it's harder. And usually to make that acquisition happen, somebody has to document a requirement in the first place.
There you go.
From the industry side, it's important to understand that the government customer is more risk adverse. The process just isn't built to buy a solution. If you sell something innovative, it seems risky to the government. It's a harder sell unless they know they have a requirement and can document a requirement for it.
And you can have an innovative solution, but it's got to solve a problem they have. That's the key difference here. And one of the ways to do that is through targeting. We talk about targeting a lot. Does the government customer have the problem you solve? How you solve it, that's your innovative solution maybe, but you have to know, do they have that problem? Do they know they have the problem you solve? And then, of course, do they care?
There may be something new out there. The government may not consider that they have a problem because they don't have that new thing. They may not care that there's something new out there that does it differently.
And do they care about solving the problem? Is it important enough for them to actually write a requirement to solve it?
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, you and I were on like Windows Vista until, you know, what was it? No, I was on Windows 95 in 2002. Like, hey, right, Pat, it just wasn't that important to them to upgrade.
A lot of times they can't afford to change, to make major changes quickly. It's just too expensive to change everything over. It takes time. Another thing that's important to understand, even if the government customer has the problem overall and they know they have the problem and they care and they want to solve it, you have to make sure that the specific government customer that you're dealing with actually buys what you sell. Because different organizations have different missions to buy different things. If you have an innovation in janitorial services like Roomba, and you're trying to sell it to the government organization that buys aircraft carriers, they may not actually be able to buy. They might want some Roombas, but that's not what they do. You're barking up the wrong tree? Is that what it is?
I'm getting a visual of guys trying to step over Roombas on an aircraft carrier.
Hey, we're trying to launch planes off the deck. Get that out of the way. This is where the 80-20 rule applies, and this is why we have the 80-20 rule and the 80-20 rule revisited podcast. How it works is if the government has a requirement for something that you sell without any real modifications, then very little relationship is required. That's where it's 80% process and 20% relationship, or even more. If the government doesn't know that they need what you sell, then lots and lots of relationship is going to be needed to drive the government's requirement process through to an acquisition. And it may be more 20% process and 80% relationship for you to actually be able to sell something to the government.
And that process takes a long time. And if you don't know that you're in the 80% relationship side, if you're a small business with an innovative product, they should buy it. I get that. The process is in your way. They're just not going to do that unless you can wait 2 years to do all the marketing and make all the trips to the customer to convince them.
All right. I think that's a good overview of the concept of requirements versus solutions-based selling and buying. Let's wrap it up.
As a contracting officer, I didn't really notice the difference. I just thought we were slow at buying. But now that I'm on the industry side and I realize that we had requirements-based acquisition. That's why it was so frustrating. When I talk to small businesses and they're like, why aren't you buying this? Because we don't normally buy things that we don't have a written requirement for. And as a seller, it's critical that you know the difference, because it's really hard to sell solutions to a requirements-based organization.
Yeah. If you have a solution like cloud-based computing and storage that changes the way the world operates, commercial consumers and companies can buy overnight, like you did with Box. Hey, that solves my problem of storing and sharing information for the company, and pay the money. It's up and running overnight. Well, figure out how to use it within a week, but that's virtually overnight. In order to make that change on the government side, the government will need to build a requirement for cloud-based computing and storage, write a spec that by the time they get it written will be behind state of art, behind what the industry's doing now. They'll have to build the funding for that requirement into the budget, wait for all that the Congress to pass a budget with all these things authorized and appropriated. They have to write an RFP, conduct a source selection, then they can award for something. That's far from overnight.
Because the government has to go through all four acquisition time zones. They can't vault over any of them. Whereas when we bought Box, I said, there's a requirement. I'm not doing any market research because I know this company is well recommended. I just leaped right to award. Fast. It wasn't quite that fast, but it was pretty fast. Like, we didn't compare 16 different ones. I didn't check to see if they were small business. I didn't care. I knew that it was going to solve our problem, and we bought it and we implemented it, and here we are.
And the day before, you might not have even thought of it.
Yeah.
Okay, Kevin, that's it for now. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll talk about this more. See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode. Thanks for joining us. And don't forget, you can also join us in the Government Contracting Network group on Facebook.